It will call the meeting to order at 1:20. I have to wait till my CLA gets back, but we have a series of minutes that we have to approve members, and we'll do that while we're waiting for other members to come. Representative Kahn, I'm reconsidering my position on cloning after finding out I have to be in Rules and Ways and Means and here all at the same time. Maybe you'll get my vote on that bill after all.
There's a lot of error in it, though.
I ended up with more than one of me.
That's an error in and of itself.
For members who are here, what we plan on doing today, and for those who are interested in the audience, is doing a walkthrough of the Omnibus State Government Bill. We will have as many questions from members as possible. Today we're going to have Ms. Roberts go through the fiscal portion, Mr. Shepherd go through the policy portion. We do have some changes that we need to make where we had intentions, and I'll try to outline what those intentions of changes are, so if people sign up to testify tomorrow, they will be testifying to the bill as amended. We're planning on having an author's technical amendment in the morning so we can have people testify, and we'll try to give you an intent of what the changes may be so you don't have to get too frazzled. The plan would then be to do a walkthrough today, answer as many members' questions as possible. In the morning, we'll take testimony during our regular committee time. Our deadline for amendments will be at noon. We have session, I believe, at noon, correct? Or 1 o'clock is the deadline for amendments tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And then we will have, do we have session tomorrow?
Yes.
We have session tomorrow at noon, and we're doing the math bill? There's discussion about doing the math bill. We don't know if we are. Some of these people setting the schedule are on math, I think, because if they think we can get all this stuff done with all these committees and omnibus bills. But anyway.
Distribution of math.
Yeah, maybe we need to pass the bill so people get their sanity back. Regardless, we will then come back after session and mark the bill up. If members have amendments that you'd like to offer, I don't have a particular necessity for me knowing what they are, but it would be nice because in years past, if chairs know and they're agreeable, we don't have to have a lot of discussion. We can just kind of adopt the amendments routinely. We tried to do a bipartisan bill here, talked with Representative Hilty last week and also over the weekend on some things. There's always items in here that not everybody's going to agree with, and remember that we're at stage one of a multi-stage process, so by the time we're done with conference committee, this is going to be a much different product than what you see here today. With that, we will start at 1:20. We will approve past minutes. We ran a little behind on a few of those. We can approve them as a block, members, or we can approve each one individually. How many sets do we have here? There's 18 sets of minutes. Would members like to look them over and maybe approve them later?
Mr. Chair, I do think we should, for the record, for the oral record, tell which dates that you're approving.
Yes, I think that would be appropriate. Does anyone have an objection to most of these bills and minutes were presentations and layovers?
Chair, I don't have any objection to the minutes at all. I think we should have just announced what dates they were.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, actually, I looked at the minutes before you got here.
You did read them.
Yes,
very
I did.
Very good. Any objection, Representative Hilton?
No.
Okay, any members have questions on them? The Chair will move approval of minutes of February 9th, February 15th, February 16th, February 22nd, February 23rd, March 1st, March 2nd, March 8th, March 9th, March 15th, March 16th, March 22nd, March 23rd, March 30th, April 5th, April 6th, April 12th, April 13th, 2005. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I think that sets a record for any committee I've ever sat on in terms of
a very
lack
productive
of diligence
committee.
Of the chair.
We're a very productive committee, Representative Kahn. I believe we'll have the first omnibus finance bill out this year.
Okay.
Hopefully a bipartisan product, but we'll see. Any questions on the minutes? The chair will renew his motion. The minutes are approved. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Minutes are approved. Okay, the next item we have will be the presentation of the omnibus bill. As I said earlier, this is a work in progress, but with the time frame we had and having our target reduced by $14 million at the last minute last week on Thursday. We had to scramble for pennies under the couch, literally, to try to get this budget balanced, and there are some things in here that would not be in here if that floor amendment hadn't passed. So for those of you who are interested in some of the reductions that maybe wouldn't have taken place, you can go check with the K-12 committee to find out where your appropriations went last week. With that, I think I will have Ms. Roberts go through the fiscal portion of the bill. Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair, members, and for the members of the audience, I do want to point out that the members are working off a legal size spreadsheet, but the copies that were made for the audience are on letter size in order to conserve some paper. So if there are questions and we're referring to a page number, that might cause a little confusion. I will try to reference the line numbers on the spreadsheet. Those are identical on both size spreadsheets. And after talking to the chair, I'm going to walk through the spreadsheet focusing mostly on the differences from the governor's proposal. You'll see that in the shaded column on the furthest right of the spreadsheet, and the column right next to that will show the difference between the chair's recommendations and the base level funding. Beginning with the legislature, the first program is the Senate budget. There are two differences here from the governor's recommendation. There's a further $500,000 reduction that is in addition to the 2.5% operating budget reduction that was recommended by the governor. It's a $1.5 million reduction to the Senate operating budget. Right below that on line 15, you'll see that there's actually an addition reduction of the recommended cancellation of the carry forward amount. The chair is recommending a cancellation of only $3.3 million as opposed to the governor's recommendation of $3.8 million, and I believe that this is part of an agreement to help fund the revisor's computer system. Moving on to the House of Representatives, you'll see that the recommendation is for the governor's 2.5% operating budget reduction, but again, there's a change on the carry-forward reduction. The recommended reduction is $1.88 million. Moving on to the LCC, the first change from the governor's recommended funding level is an increase of $28,000. This is on line 57 for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission. The second change on line 67 is elimination of funding for the Commission on the Economic Status of Women. This is a $414,000 reduction. And finally, moving on to line 76, the chair includes the recommended 2.5% operating budget reduction. And the final change for the LCC on line 87, again, the recommendation does not include the cancellation of the LCC's carry-forward account. Moving on to the governor's office, the recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation for his office, which is a 2.5% reduction, or $179,000 for the biennium. The next office is the Office of the State Auditor. The recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation with one difference. On line 138, there's an additional $2,057,000 for the biennium for restoration of the audit practice staff. And as you may recall during the testimony on this piece, the auditor does bill out to the audit clients for the cost of these audits. So when we get to the bottom of the spreadsheet, you'll see there's an offsetting revenue item. So actually, the net cost to the target is zero. Moving on to the Attorney General's office. Again, the recommendation for the Attorney General's office is the same as the governor's recommendation, a 2.5% operating budget reduction, which is equivalent to $1.1 million for the biennium. The next office is the Office of the Secretary of State. And again, the recommendation here is the same as the governor's recommendation for a 2.5% operating budget reduction. This is a reduction that is, I believe, calculated on the administrative portion of the office and does not impact the elections portion of the office. That concludes the constitutional offices. Now moving on to state agencies. The first state agency is the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. Again, the recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation, including a budget reduction of $36,000 for the biennium. And you'll also notice that the recommendation to change the funding for the public subsidy campaign finance program is included. This change would move the program from being funded through a direct and open general fund appropriation to a special revenue appropriation, which would be funded directly by the taxpayer. It's a difference in current law. The taxpayer can indicate they want funding for the program, but the funding actually comes from the general fund. So, moving on to the State Board of Investment. Again, here the recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation, and it includes the change to the funding structure for the program from direct general fund appropriation, which has been recouped through charges to the different funds, to moving the bulk of the State Board of Investments operations to a direct special revenue fund appropriation. Again, moving on to the Office of Administrative Hearings, the recommendation again is the same as the governor's recommendation. One item that I should point out that I don't know if the committee heard because it came in the supplemental budget is the change item regarding the transfer of the Municipal Boundary Adjustment Program from the Department of Administration. That change has already happened through executive order, and it creates a new general fund appropriation for this office, and you'll see that offsetting reduction in the Department of Administration. Moving on to the Department of Administration. The first program in that department is Technology Services. The recommendation is the same as the governor's, including the reductions to the Office of Technology. For State Facilities Services, there are one small change and another change. Under real estate management, you'll notice that there is a $200,000 difference for agency relocation and capital investment recommendations. This includes the recommendation for agency relocation that was included in the governor's bonding bill. The bonding bill did not include those general fund appropriations with the agreement that would be moved and considered under this bill. And as a result, the committee actually realized the $200,000 gain by that item being moved to this target. But there is full funding for the Department of Human Services agency relocation, and the other relocation items requested by the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Sure.
To that?
Representative Solberg.
There was some concern 2 years ago or last year on the timing, whether they needed it all this biennium. Are we confident that all of that is needed this biennium?
Ms. Roberts, all I know is that was the agreement that the Capital Investment Committee worked out with the Senate. I'm not exactly sure on the details, but maybe we can find that out. Representative Solberg, for tomorrow morning.
Mr. Chairman, I think the agreement was to carry it here, but
right.
I think that there may be some timing issues. You may not need all that appropriation this biennium. So let's ask that question anyway.
Moving on to line 309, there's an item that reflects the transfer of the functions for the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board to the Department of Administration. So this is showing up as a $524,000 increase to the Department of Administration's budget. Moving on to State and Community Services within the Department of Administration, the change from the governor in this program area is on line 342. There is a one-time partial restoration of the governor's cut to the Land Management Information Center of $200,000. And finally, on line 366 of the spreadsheet, you'll see that the change recommendation does not include funding for the governor's initiative for the faith-based initiative, and that's a $300,000 difference from the governor. Moving on to administrative management services within the Department of Administration, on line 388 of the spreadsheet, you'll see again a change from the governor. There is a $100,000 one-time appropriation for Representative Erickson's assistive technology grants bill. And finally, those are the changes to the actual operations of the Department of Administration. If you move to line, beginning on line 427 of the spreadsheet, you'll see the changes to the public broadcasting funding. These funding for public broadcasting is appropriated to the Department of Administration. They act as the fiscal agent for those grants. And beginning with public television, there is a 2.5% reduction to the equipment grant space and the matching grant space. That's a $68,000 change from the recommendation of the governor. Moving on to public radio, first for the AMPRS program, there's again a 2.5% reduction or $16,000. And finally, for Minnesota Public Radio, all funding for Minnesota Public Radio is eliminated in this recommendation. Moving on, past the Department of Administration, beginning on line 466 is the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, and you'll see here the related transfer of those functions to the Department of Administration, so there's a $524,000 reduction showing here. And finally, moving on to the Department of Finance, the recommendation for the Department of Finance's budget is the same as the governor's. Also for Department of Employee Relations, I believe, again, the chair's recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation for that agency. And finally, for the Department of Revenue, the chair's recommendation, again, is the same as the governor's recommendation, and that does include the new compliance initiative, which is expected to generate additional revenues of $68 million.
And Ms. Roberts, that is being carried in the tax bill, correct?
No, Mr. Chair, this particular compliance piece is being carried in, both the appropriation and the revenues are being carried in the state government bill. There is another compliance initiative, I believe, that's being considered by the tax bill.
That's the other portion.
The tax committee.
Mr. Chair, would you do that again?
Go ahead, run through it again, because I've
been working on that very recently. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, the governor's recommendation for the Department of Revenue, as it was released in January, included a recommendation for an additional compliance initiative, which was projected to raise an additional $68 million in revenue. That recommendation is included in this bill. It includes both increased appropriations to the Department of Revenue, and then the offsetting revenue is also tracked against our target. There is another compliance initiative, which I believe the chair was referring to, that in recent weeks has been part of discussion in the tax committee. And if that initiative is approved, it would be done in the tax bill.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kahn.
What's the difference between the two initiatives?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, tax chair is not here, but I believe the new initiative that's under consideration is different in that it's not simply appropriating money to the department, but it actually is a tax policy change that would increase some penalties significantly.
I believe it's the department will bully people more to get money, Representative Kahn, and that doesn't cost money to do it. But the initiative that needs money in order to take place, we appropriate through revenue. And it did make sense when it was explained to me. Ms. Roberts?
Members, moving on to beginning on line 651 is the Department of Military Affairs. The recommendation is largely the same as the governor's. You'll see that it includes the 100% tuition reimbursement funding and the governor's recommendation for the reenlistment incentive program. Those are on lines 685 and 686. There is a change on line 676, providing $70,000 in funding for the National Guard Youth Camp. That was a bill that Representative Bruce Anderson presented. And then I should also note that the spreadsheet in error includes on 689 the governor's change item for the Support Our Troops grant. And I believe that, I'll need to double check this, but that the license plate provision was either removed or delayed by the Transportation Committee. So that item, which is related to gift funds, it's may need to be removed from this spreadsheet. Moving on to the Department of Veterans Affairs, beginning on line 708. Again, the recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation with two changes, two additions on line 729. There's $100,000 in one-time funding for vocational rehabilitation and chemical dependency grants. That was Representative Blaine had a bill, and this appropriation is related to that. And then on the next line, Representative Mullery's bill for outreach to underserved veterans, there is $500,000 again in one-time money provided. Moving on to the small veteran service organizations, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Military Order of Purple Heart, and the Disabled American Vets, the recommendation is the same as the governor's recommendation for these organizations. For the Lawful Gambling Control Board, beginning on line 783, again, the recommendation is the same as the governor's, and you'll recall that this board is now funded through the Special Revenue Fund, through fees. And again, moving on to the Minnesota Racing Commission, again, a Special Revenue Fund item. The chair's recommendation includes the governor's recommendation as well as the additional funding from House File 2044, which was Representative Finstead's bill. The administrative expenses increase related to the cost the board is incurring for the potential track in Anoka County. Moving on to the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, beginning on line 802. There are two changes here. The first one on line 807 eliminates the funding for the Amateur Sports Commission. The second item on line 813, there is elimination of the $1.5 million Target Center appropriation. Moving on, then, beginning on line 816 to the councils, the four councils that are funded through this committee, the Black Minnesotans Council, Chicano Latino Affairs Council, Asian Pacific Minnesotans Council, and the Indian Affairs Council. The recommendation all includes a 2.5% budget reduction for each of the councils. This is a change from the governor's recommendation. Beginning on line 860, the contingent accounts that are tracked in this bill, and you'll see here on line 863 that the chair is recommending elimination of the $1 million base for the general fund contingent account.
Ms. Roberts, how many times was that used in the last 2 years of the biennium?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe that in the last biennium, the general fund contingent account was not used. I would have to check with Department of Finance on that. And then the history before that is quite varied. I can look into it for you. And also the funding levels for this account have varied quite a bit in recent years. Moving on, the next programs are the various retirement appropriations that are included in this bill, and those recommendations, again, are all the same as the governor's recommendations. This includes the Minnesota State Retirement System, the appropriations that they have remaining for legislative retirement and constitutional officers' retirement, the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund, and the First Class Cities Teacher State Aid Program. And, Mr. Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the appropriations changes. Looking at the bottom, the last two pages of the spreadsheet, I can walk you through the reconciliation with the appropriations and the revenue changes. Beginning on line 969, you'll see the outline of the different general fund revenue changes that are included in this bill. The first one is the cancellation of the unspent electronic real estate task force for $1.76 million. That was a governor's recommendation. The next one is the enhanced tax compliance initiative we were discussing earlier for $68 million. And the third item under the revenue is the cancellation of accumulated unclaimed prize funds in the lottery account. That's $2 million or $2.1 million for the general fund. There's also an additional $875,000 for the environmental fund. The next items are all changes from the governor's recommendation. You'll see the state auditor. Here are the offsetting revenues for the restoration of their audit practice. There is an additional, actually this is a governor's recommendation as well, $1.9 million for federal reimbursement for the human services relocation. And then on line 975, you'll see there's a $2.5 million each year transfer out of the facilities repair and replacement account within the Department of Administration. And this is actually a one-time transfer. On line 976, an additional $2 million transferred from the building codes account in the special revenue fund within Department of Administration. And finally, on line 977, $6.44 million for sale of surplus state lands, which totals to $88.4 million in new general fund revenues. And finally, at the very bottom of the page, you'll see that the direct and open general fund appropriations, along with the carry forward general fund in this bill, would total $564 million. That is offset by the $88 million in new general fund revenues, bringing us to $475,993,000. And then to finish our reconciliation against the target, I am tracking the additional $50,000 that was appropriated to the LCC in Representative Vanderveer's bill that was heard late last week.
Do we have questions for members on the financial side of the bill? Anything that members didn't understand or follow? I don't know if you need justification, being that our target got slashed down. I did have a question about public radio this morning. My basic statement is when your CEO's salary exceeds the state appropriation, the compensation package is $584,000 for the top person, and your state appropriation is, or $551,000, I'm sorry, and your state appropriation is less than $200,000. When times of need come up for K-12 and we get slashed up to provide money for it, I just didn't think that was money that we needed to do. I realize it's for capital versus general, but monies are always fungible back and forth in your own funds. So that's the reasoning behind that. Representative Kahn?
Well, Mr. Chair.
And members, on the spreadsheets when we referred, if you could give us line numbers too.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at these various veterans offices, and I wonder, do they all have separate reception people and separate offices and separate clerical staff and separate copying machines and all of that stuff?
I'm not sure about the answer to that, Representative Kahn, but what we would like to do is have members ask questions now, and then we'll have the organizations come forward in the morning, and we're going to go through the answers to members' questions. So who in the audience is here from the Department of Veterans Affairs? Okay, if we could have you answer that question in the morning.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Other questions on the financial side? Mr. Shepard, let's go through the policy side of things.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to be walking off the bill document itself, the A050609, and I'm going to start on with Article 2 on page 10. And on the military, when we get to those articles, Jim Cleary, who's at the end of the table, will explain those. He's worked on those. And, Mr. Chair, with your permission, when we get to some of the Secretary of State election law things, if I could perhaps ask the Secretary of State representatives to go over some of those, because I haven't worked on those items.
I will be interrupting periodically, Mr. Shepard, and on page 10, line 48, I guess I'm going to have Ms. Roberts just chime in with how much savings we realize from that change, but we'll have you start out with page 10.
Mr. Chair and members, the first section on page 10 provides that the legislature would not meet in regular session in even-numbered years before April 1st.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, I did receive some estimates from the controller of the House that estimated the savings to the House for 1 month of the shorter session is approximately $500,000. I think he's refining those numbers a little bit, and I can share them with you, but that was his first estimate. The
per
savings
month.
Per month.
Okay. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, Section 2 on the top of page 11 is the bill that the committee saw before about paid advertising and donations in legislative publications, with the new language on lines 11 to 13 that the House and the Senate may, instead of must, solicit advertising in legislative directories. Mr. Chair, members, Section 3 asks the Legislative Coordinating Commission to establish one office to provide public information about the legislature. I think the idea, this has been something this committee has passed before, and the idea would be that it would combine some of the facets of the current House and Senate offices. Section 4 requires the House and Senate to adopt rules so that there will be one regular hour of convening daily sessions in both houses. And Section 5 encourages the House and Senate to adopt rules to establish a system of joint committees.
Representative Kahn had a lot of input on that page, by the way.
Chairman.
Worried about it.
Oh.
Now.
Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I actually have not given it to Jared, but I have a little wimpier amendment to this, too. Which
okay.
is. It doesn't take it away. It okay. gives another wimpy alternative, wimpier alternative.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, Sections 6 through 10 provide that the governor will appoint the executive director of the Indian Affairs Council, the Council on Chicano Latino People, the Council on Black Minnesotans, and the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. Section 10 on page 14 requires the governor to designate an employee in his office or in another agency to coordinate faith-based initiatives. Section 11 on page 14 authorizes the Secretary of State to sell intellectual property rights associated with the statewide voter registration system to other states or to units of local government in other states. Section 12, beginning on page 14 and continuing all the way over to page 18 or 19, is Representative Beard's bill, House File 899, which sets up a process under which local governments can request the state auditor to grant waivers from administrative rules or from procedural laws. That brings over to Section 13 over on page 19, which relates to the State Board of Investment. And that section and the next section, the next two sections, relate to the initiative under which the State Board of Investment will recover its costs directly from the retirement funds for whom it invests money, rather than having the money appropriated from the general fund. So these sections all were part of this, the original governor's bill in House File 1481, and they implement the spreadsheet change that Ms. Roberts described earlier. And Mr. Chair, that carries all the way over to page 25. The language on page 25 is a different issue. This is from House File 674, Representative Knobloch's bill, which provides that certain financial and proprietary data that the SBI receives in connection with its venture capital investments is private data. And the next section on page 26, Section 17, relates to that same bill. Section 18 on page 26 limits the amount a state agency can assess through an administrative penalty order process to $100. Section 19, beginning on 26 and continuing over to the middle of 28, is from House File 116, Representative Seifert's bill, requiring legislative approval of certain administrative rules that have a specified effect on cities or small businesses. The bill has been changed a bit since the committee last saw it. Rather than the entire rule not taking effect, the provision would be, it's on page 27, lines 13 to 16, that a business or a city that's affected could file a notice with the agency claiming an exemption from the rule until the legislature approved the rule. So if a business or a city claimed the exemption, it wouldn't apply to that business or city, instead of the prior version of the bill in which the entire rule didn't apply to anybody.
And that's a work in progress as time goes on. I've been working with Representative Loeffler on language for that, actually. So this is what we've come up with so far. Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, on the top of page 29, there's a provision that requires executive agencies that issue professional licenses to notify license holders of changes made to laws or rules under which fines or sanctions can be imposed. The next two sections deal with the transfer of the CAP board to the Department of Administration, providing that it is established within the department and that the Commissioner of Administration, after consulting with the board, would appoint an executive secretary and would provide administrative support. Mr. Chair,
I was just going to say, Mr. Shepherd, that we've had some discussions about how the CAP board is really cannibalizing itself, and this was some language that I don't know one of the members of the committee thought might help with administrative costs. I don't know if it'll work or whatnot, but we'll have discussion on that in the morning. Is the CAP board here? If you could, folks could come in the morning and just give us an idea of how that may work or may not work for you. That was one of the members had some suggestions on saving on administrative expenses. Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, on page 30, section 24 provides that the parking spaces on Aurora Avenue in front of the Capitol must be reserved for the public.
Roy is for good government, Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, the next section relates to the CAP board. Again, this is an initiative that has been enacted as a temporary rider before. This would make it permanent. Public bodies submit proposals to the CAP board, and they have to provide enough money to pay for those, and this appropriates to the board that money. This has been, it was carried as a rider last biennium, and this would permanently codify that rider. The bottom of page 30, section 26, requires the Commissioner of Finance on January 10th of odd-numbered years to report on programs or components of programs for which expenditures are forecast to increase more than 15%, and it would contain an analysis of the factors that are causing those increases. The next several sections, Mr. Chair, all came from Department of Finance recommendations which were proposed in the original version of House File 1481, which was the governor's state government finance bill. Some of these, I think, are technical in nature. There's a striking of a reference to the Intertechnologies Division in connection to statewide systems. In Section 28, there's language stricken about statewide systems again. And the bottom of page 31 and continuing to page 32 provides for rounding to the nearest tenth of a percent an amount needed to increase aid payments to school districts in the current law in which there's dealing with additional revenues that come in during a biennium.
Mr. Chair, Representative, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
If somebody's rounding, you may go up and you don't have the money for it in the forecast. If it's 0.5 or 0.6, it comes out, and if you have to round up to put into that fund, as I understand it, there may not be the money in the forecast for that money. I don't know how much money that is, would be, but...
Would you like someone from finance tomorrow morning?
Yeah, check in there.
Someone here from finance? Someone raised their hand. Could you answer that question tomorrow morning for us, please, at 8:15? Okay. Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chair, another Department of Finance provision on the bottom of 32 and the top of 33. This is striking language that I think is obsolete relating to forecasting payments that came in through the Tobacco Settlement Fund. I believe that that's not needed anymore. Mr. Chair, on page 33 provides that as a condition of receiving a grant from an appropriation of state funds, the person or entity receiving the grant would agree to spend no more than 10% of the funds for administrative purposes. And there's a provision in which the Commissioner of Finance could give exceptions to that. The next section provides that an agency, a state agency, can't transfer state-owned real property for less than the appraised value, or if it hasn't been appraised, for less than the market value. The next section, Mr. Chair, deals with state publications, and it provides that publications put out...
Representative Kahn.
On that transfer of real property, I have a little question about the absolute nature of it. I could see questions where the property might be transferred and be used for some shared use that's useful. So
that's a work in progress, Representative Kahn. There was just some evidence brought forward, and some of the items that showed up that didn't have hearings were things that were brought up by people kind of in the last couple weeks about state property kind of just flowing out at... and this is mainly land where we need to bump up that number on land sales at the end that really hasn't been getting the market value. Now, if we end up having this group that presented to us last week where they do real estate management and find people to purchase these properties. I'm not sure this is the language that works, but if we've got something we can work on, that it's very flexible.
I didn't object to the principle. I just got a little nervous about the absolute nature of it.
Agreed, Representative Kahn. Mr. Shepard?
At the bottom of page 33, Mr. Chair, the top of 34 provides that state publications are to contain only material that provides information about state office or facilitate public access to services, and it must be directly related to the duties of the public official.
Jim?
Representative Kahn?
Is that going to, are we also going to start looking at websites and so forth? Are we defining websites as publication or...
Representative Kahn, I haven't put anything in there on that. This is the governor putting his baby pictures on. I know he had some interesting comments. If people have, this is kind of tough to police, but if people have, I was even thinking that we just try to set up some principles on what can and cannot be on there. But I have had members come forward that want to put things on their house website that make common sense.
Yes.
And they're not allowed to.
To me, it
goes too much the other way in some way.
I actually think that one of the things we should possibly look at is, I thought that from when we started with the House website. And actually, one of the examples I would have gone in the exact opposite direction as Rukavina did. I would have said that the governor sets the standard that we can all follow. I don't know about baby pictures, but whatever. You know, I think, for example, when I first asked about putting position papers on the House website, I was told that you couldn't do it. But what you just do them as a press release, and then you can put it on. So, but I do think that we ought to be able to do things. We ought to be able to put more pictures. We ought to do things to be able to make our House website more interesting, better, would not be, use them as totally political vehicles. So I think maybe we should put some language in that says we're going to determine what we can do with that, too. Because we've left it to an administrative committee. I don't think there are even any House members who pay any attention to what's going on. So.
Point well taken, Representative Kahn. And remember, if anybody has language, we have to have it by 1 o'clock tomorrow, so it's going to be kind of tight going here, but we'll see what we can do. Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, the middle of page 34 requires the Commissioner of Administration or other state agencies to consider purchasing used goods if they may result in the best value. Section 35 requires the Commissioner cannot approve a contract or purchase of goods or services greater than $5 million unless a cost-benefit analysis shows a positive benefit, or if it doesn't, the governor may approve the contract if a cost-effectiveness study shows that the project is the most effective way to provide a necessary public good. This applies to contracts for goods or services with a useful life of more than 3 years. Section 36 on the top of page 35 deletes from the reverse auction authority the ability to use a reverse auction for engineering design services. Section 37 on the bottom of page 35 requires that the Commissioner of Administration avoid awarding master contracts on an exclusive basis if this would exclude small businesses, and requires that when feasible, when entering into a master contract, the Commissioner must attempt to negotiate terms that allow agencies the option to purchase from small businesses, particularly those that are geographically proximate to the entity that's making the purchase.
Members, that's language that we had from presentations. Representative Hill tonight had a colloquy on that. I don't know if that works for you, but trying to give a tip of the hat to some of local businesses without being collusionary or anything. But if you have some suggestions on fixing that up any better, members, feel free to chime in.
We'll probably find out soon enough, Mr. Chair, why that doesn't work.
Okay. Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, in the middle of page 36, it authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to award a bid preference to motor vehicles manufactured in Minnesota. Next, section 39.
Chair,
Representative Solberg.
Like the bill of 1983 that says by Minnesota.
We tried not to get into that, Representative Solberg, but by doing the economically disadvantaged piece, we think that we can do it without having any.
Mr. Chair, the concern is retaliatory.
Retaliatory, thank you.
Other states.
Yeah. And if we get some indications on that, that may be falling to the wayside quickly. But so far, we haven't heard much, but the bill just was unveiled an hour ago. So. Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, the next section authorizes the commissioner to transfer state surplus computers to Minnesota Computers for Schools. The section after that provides that the commissioner may sell the surplus gun used by a state trooper to the trooper that used that gun in the course of employment. The next section.
that was okay. Before everybody gets all excited, that was brought up. First of all, I'm not taking any amendments to this bill. If people want to amend something else onto this, but the word gun is in the bill. But this was brought up very late, Mr. Shepard, last week, I believe, where we had a state trooper who had the same gun for 30 years, and they were reissuing new ones, apparently Department of Administration disposes of him, and he'd like to have his gun that he carried for years and years. I guess I'd rather have him have the gun than some guy buying it at the surplus auction site. So this is just language that allows them first stab at the gun. Mr. Shepard.
First shot
at the gun. Sorry, I don't see him carry knives. Mr. Shepard?
The next section, Mr. Chair, requires that the governor appoint the director of the Amateur Sports Commission. The next two sections after that, on page 37 and 38, authorize the commissioner of the Iron Range and Resources and Rehabilitation Agency to offer a targeted early separation incentive to specified employees of that agency. That continues on to the middle of page 38, which deals with local government bodies making charges for water service and provide that the charge may be made only against the persons whose names are on record for billing.
Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman, are any of these things that we've seen anywhere?
I know there's a bill on this, Representative Kahn, that came through. The problem we have in a lot of these situations is, for example, civil law and elections. We used to have GovOps had elections, and that was kind of our companion policy committee. So now we have local government. Well, who's the companion committee for local government? Who's the companion committee for civil? To me, civil law and elections companion committee is judiciary. But the election stuff got thrown over to us, and local government, we kind of was the redheaded stepchild, not to make fun of Representative Olson, but it was, you know, we don't know where to put all his stuff. And
okay.
So there's
but the example is, so one of the simple examples, these were heard by some committee, they just had no
problem. Yeah, the ones that I know of that mostly have floated in here have been bills, and I believe have had hearings somewhere. To be honest, I wasn't wild about having annexation involvement in this bill, so that will hopefully travel on its own. But we'd like, I mean, apparently when you and Representative Krenke had bills come out, I've tried to have most of these things in here, at least have had a bill or a hearing or public testimony, and anyone who has concerns about anything in this bill need to come in tomorrow morning and testify.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing that I would really caution against is putting something in that was killed by another committee. So I hope that there's nothing.
Representative Kahn, I've been very sensitive about that, and I've had requests for things to come into the bill that have been killed, and I've said no, I think, to every one of those so far. And that's been on both sides of the aisle, by the way. I don't know, but I know that in the situation where we've had, you know, if they were laid over in another committee, at least it wasn't killed, but I don't feel comfortable. I've had people over here and people over here say, oh, well, you know, can you put this in? And I just don't feel very comfortable. Now, if there's any evidence of something that has been killed in a committee, members or people in the audience, please come and see us, because I want to be somewhat consistent about that if I can be. Mr. Shepard?
Has this been traveling by itself in general orders, I guess?
I don't even know. I'm not sure, Mr. Shepard. We'll dig in a little and see what we can find out. Mr. Shepard, we're going to keep on going because I know we have caucus in 20 minutes. So,
Mr. Chair, the next provision on the top of page 39 requires local governments to consider used goods. The provision after that deals with elected officials of local governments saying that they can't incur more than $1,000 in public costs for trips outside of the state unless it's approved on a roll call vote at a public meeting of the governing board. The next section relates to cities or counties with populations of more than 15,000, and it requires them to notify their residents of the names and salaries of the three highest paid employees and specifies different ways for doing that. The next section authorizes the Commissioner of Administration to lease out the building at 168 Aurora Avenue for use as an after-school activity facility and child care. This is a bill the committee heard. The next section requires sale of state-owned lands in the amount of $6.44 million. This is a spreadsheet item that Ms. Roberts described earlier. At the bottom of page 40 is requiring the Commissioner of Administration to study vehicles owned by executive branch agencies and to report the results of the study to the legislature. Section 51 then requires the Commissioner to issue a request for a proposal seeking a private entity to assume responsibility for maintenance and management of vehicles owned by executive agencies. Section 52 requires the Commissioner to issue an RFP seeking a private entity to buy or lease the Ford building and requiring that this document would forbid the new owner or tenant from tearing the building down or from altering the historic features of the facade of the building. The next section, page 41 and 42, requires the Commissioner to issue an RFP seeking a private entity to assume at no cost to the state some or all of the Commissioner's responsibilities for real estate management services, which are specified there in the bill. Section 54 requires that executive agencies consider using services provided by the Government Training Service in the next biennium before contracting with outside vendors for similar services. This is a rider that has been carried in this bill in last biennium, I think. Section 55 requires the Commissioner of Administration to study public access to Internet-based governmental information and Internet access for citizens to perform other Internet-based activities and to report to the legislature by August of 2006. The repealers on page 42, section 56, are the Council on the Economic Status of Women, the sunset date on the deposit of litigation proceeds in the general fund. A repealer, 16A.30, I believe, requires agencies to get permission of the Commissioner of Finance before applying for non-state funds. This was in the Governor's recommendation bill. And 240A.08 is the standing appropriation for the Target Center appropriation. Article 3, Mr. Chair, the first section is section 1 from Representative Beard's House File 913, which is a doer bill relating to contracting with insurance providers. Only section 1 of that bill is in this article. The next section, section 2, is from House File 1953, Representative Cornish's bill, which provides certain post-retirement options for employees who retire from state service and then come back to work on a limited basis. The next two sections, Mr. Chair, are actually misplaced in this article. These are election law provisions that got put in the wrong place when we assembled the bill. The first one deals with vouching on for proof of residence oaths on election day. And the next one deals with voting systems for disabled voters. I'm going to suggest to the chair that there be a technical amendment for tomorrow to move these to the proper article of the bill. Section 5 on page 48 is a salary savings leave provision. This is nearly identical to the provision that was enacted in last year's bill that would provide for state employees to take salary savings leave and to accrue certain benefits during those leaves during the upcoming biennium. I believe the one thing that may be different, I believe, from last year's provision is that this would require contributions to be made to the pension funds if the employee wanted to get service credit for that. Section 6 is Representative De La Forest's bill, which ratifies labor agreements, compensation plans, and salaries that were previously approved by the Subcommittee on Employee Relations this summer and fall. Article 4 on page 51, continuing to page 55, is Representative Mark Olson's bill, House File 1120, I believe. That might not be right. 1172. That establishes a provision under which local governments can seek legislation that would allow them, that would provide for opting out of state mandates to local governments. Mr. Chair, the next article is most of the next article is from a bill that was assembled by the Secretary of State dealing with elections and campaign finance. There are a number of provisions mixed in here that are not part of the Secretary of State's housekeeping bill. And I don't know, given the time, Mr. Chair, how much you want to go through that right now? Or
I know Representative Hilty was going to read it over. Maybe we can talk on the floor a little bit about this.
Yes.
I think a majority of it is from there, but there's some pieces of this that are brought in from elsewhere.
Mr. Chair, part of this is the Campaign Finance Board's housekeeping bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, maybe they'll have a chance to look this over and be able to answer questions tomorrow from both the Secretary of State and the Campaign Finance Board.
Yeah. And there's two, I thought there were two pieces that are in conflict with each other, actually, from two separate parts of the bill, but I'll try to take a look at it again and see what we come up with. Why don't we'll have a little discussion and we'll skip past that for now.
Mr. Chair, the next article then starts on page 122. It is derived from Representative Knobloch's bill dealing with Minneapolis teacher pension funds. This is similar to a bill that I believe passed the House last year. That goes from page 122 to page 130. And then, Mr. Chair, I would yield to Jim Cleary if he would, on page 130, to go over the two military and veterans articles.
Mr. Cleary, welcome.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Article 7 begins on page 130. Actually, these articles are very small in this bill. It was a very good year in Veterans and Military Affairs, but most of those bills pass through separately. And they are also spread among four or five other omnibus finance bills. Looking at Article 7, beginning on page 30, Section 1 and Section 4 clarify the pay differential law for state employees who have been ordered to active service. This ensures that soldiers sitting in Iraq don't have to spend hours each payday filling out forms and so on. This, by the way, this particular provision may be on the verge of being signed into law. It's on the consent calendar as its last step in the Senate. Section 2 on page 133 authorizes rental facilities at Camp Ripley, and any proceeds from that would go for the operation and maintenance of the base. And that's already current practice, so this just formalizes current practice, more or less.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fulbert.
We just heard this bill in Ways and Means as well. What's the status in the Senate? Mr. Blaine would probably know.
Representative Blaine.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, it is on the consent calendar on the Senate side.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And members, for some of these bills that have been other bills traveling through when we were kind of starting to assemble these articles with Mr. Cleary, we weren't exactly sure where they were at in the process, so we'll either drop them out in conference or what have you. I don't believe there's any controversial ones. The license plate one did not go in the bill. Representative Kahn had some questions about it in GovOps, and so we kind of left that out. Now, it could show up as a floor amendment, but right now it's not in the bill because I wanted to have some respect for members who had concerns about it. Mr. Cleary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, when you talk about the license plate bill, I think you're talking about the support our troops proposal by the governor, right?
Yes.
Yes. I think there's another license plate. There are several, actually, but another one creates a license plate for the new veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan war, and it's my understanding that will show up in transportation finance. That's quite a different bill.
Yep.
Okay. Section 3, on page 134, simply authorizes the Adjutant General to pay retired members who agree to come back to work for short periods of time, to pay them at a somewhat higher level than their retirement level. Sections 5 and 10, beginning on page 135, clarify vacation and sick leave accrual for public employees who've been called to active duty. Since World War II, such an employee would continue to accrue vacation and sick leave. But it's been so long since this has been used that a number of cities and local governments have, and, well, not the state government, have forgotten about it. So this clarifies that. It uses language from an attorney general interpretation from 1945. Section 6 on page 136 extends the time frame for National Guard tuition reimbursement grant usage by soldiers who have been called to active duty. It extends that time frame beyond their active military service by as much as 2 years plus the amount of time that the person has served in the active military service. So, for example, most of our soldiers are now being called for 18 months of active duty. If they have eligibility remaining after they come back from active duty in this program, they would be able to use it even if they're no longer in the service for actually 3.5 years. If the person has been separated or discharged from active duty due to a service-connected disability or illness or injury, that time period would be 8 years. And a National Guard member or former member who has a 30% or more VA-certified service-connected disability could transfer those benefits, if the person has any benefits remaining, transfer them to a spouse. And that is revocable. All of these authorizations under that program are subject to the current limit of 144 semester hours of support under the program, so roughly 4 years, 4.5 years under the program. If they used it before they've gone off to war, of course it's gone.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Solberg.
My one question on that transferring is, if someone already has a master's degree and then is eligible for it, is it them to transfer to their dependents? We have some questions on that for tomorrow, maybe.
Okay, Mr. Cleary?
Yes, on section 7 to 9, beginning on page 139, clarifies that the eligibility for appointment to armory boards includes enlisted men as well as enlisted men and women, as well as officers. Going on to the next article, Article 8 on veterans, beginning on page 143, Section 1 directs the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to develop educational materials on the prevention of hepatitis C and to disseminate that information. There's no funding provided for that. Also on page 143, Section 2 authorizes the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to use any unexpended funds from the Technical Assistance Program for the County Veterans Service Officer Program, rather, for training purposes, for training those officers. Sections 3 to 9, beginning on page 144, deal with Washington County Disabled Veterans Rest Camp on Big Marine Lake. It excludes the camp from the park preserve. It provides for some zoning changes, and it protects the property from certain condemnation procedures. Section 10 allows a memorial plaque to be placed in the Court of Honor and Capitol grounds in honor of Gulf War veterans. And as with the other memorial plaques, that would be using non-state funding sources. And Section 11 is a repealer. It repeals a provision in current veterans preference law that disallows a veteran who is retired from receiving preference in state and local hiring. That provision would be repealed. And that completes those two.
Any questions on the veterans article? Members? Yeah. Representative Kahn.
That Washington County one, is that ever heard in any committee? I don't recall it in GovOp.
Mr. Cleary, do you know?
Yes, I do.
I wonder if we were gone that day.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, it's been heard in local government and taxes and has received awaiting its final passage in the House. It's had its second reading.
It's on the floor right now, I believe, Representative Kahn.
Right. And in the Senate, it's passed out of state and local government and judiciary, and it's sitting in taxes, to my knowledge.
Any other questions on the veterans article? Questions for members in general? Representative Kahn?
Well, actually, on that one, it kind of looks as if we're going in the same direction we went with Big Island, which we're just reversing now. So I'm just because I'm not on any committee that ever heard it.
I think it went through like two or three at least.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Cleary? Any other questions in general? I have to go up and vote in Ways and Means at 2:30. They said they were scheduling to vote for. What I will do is visit with Representative Hilty. I don't know how to say this politely, but the chair doesn't, when I have to help run the floor, doesn't appreciate having 40 notes piling up on my desk about coming out and seeing everyone. So if you have some concerns, come in tomorrow morning and air them out publicly, if you would. We have an enormous schedule with me being on more committees than I should be. And this is, as I said, a working document, and we're going to try to get started tomorrow promptly at 8:15 in the morning. And what room are we in, Mr. Trudeau? We're in the basement hearing room, which is our normal hearing room. I'll be visiting with members on both sides here if there's any concerns that they may have. Amendments due by 1 o'clock, and then we are planning a meeting when?
Well, at 2 or after 4 session.
2 o'clock or after 4 session, whichever is earlier, I suppose. And then we will plan on voting the bill out tomorrow as amended and going to Ways and Means for Wednesday after session. Any other questions? And I'm going to run to Ways and Means, and Representative Hilty is probably going to run up there with me. Okay, meeting adjourned.